88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us this morning. And now a conversation with the poet and novelist Baron Wormser. He lives in Vermont, and he's the former Poet Laureate of Maine. He grew up and went to college here in Baltimore, and he'll be returning to Charm City tomorrow night to talk at the Enoch Pratt Library about his new novel, Teach Us That Piece. It's set in Baltimore in 1962 and 63, and it tells the story of a woman named Susan Mermelstein and her family, as increasingly their lives become as turbulent as the historical moment in which they live. Baron Wormser joins me on the line from Montpelier, Vermont. Good morning. Nice to talk to you.
Good morning, Tom.
So tell us a little bit about Susan, and in particular her son, Arthur.
Susan is a 39-year-old high school teacher in Baltimore. She's the mother of three. She's an English teacher. Her mom lives with her. She is not having a great time in her marriage. The high school she's teaching in Baltimore has integrated. Her neighborhood is changing. She's picking up the newspaper and reading about Martin Luther King Jr. and the civil rights movement. So things are changing. For her son, Arthur, who goes to Baltimore City College and is 16 years old, he is meeting black students at City and learning from them what is going on in many ways about race in Baltimore. He also learns some things firsthand from his experiences with a landlord driving around East and West Baltimore. So the book is very much about sheltered people who are sheltered white people who are starting to learn what's going on in Baltimore concerning race.
And there's certainly, for folks from here, there are all sorts of great landmarks. Gwynne Oak Park is a part of this book. The Enoch Pratt Library, where you will be speaking tomorrow night, is part of it. Where does Susan and her family live? What neighborhood is changing at that time?
They live in Northwest Baltimore off of Liberty Heights.
Mm-hmm. And you take up the issues of race and politics, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and as you say, Dr. King's growing movement. Are they engaged and aware of what's going on in the world around them? And to what level are they engaged, and how do they evolve throughout the course of the novel?
Well, they evolve quite a bit in the course of the novel. At the beginning of the novel, they're relatively sheltered and focused on their own concerns. But as they meet people in Baltimore and talk with people in Baltimore, and in Susan's case, become intimately involved with a Negro man in Baltimore, they begin to change, and they change quite a bit. And the novel ends, as you know, with the March on Washington, obviously an enormous event in the history of our country.
And the people that Susan and Arthur know, Arthur in particular is close to a classmate of his named Edward. And Susan, as you mentioned, gets very, very close to Jarvis, who's a music teacher in the school system. Are these based on people that you knew and personal experiences that you had when you were growing up here?
To a degree. Writers are very fond of that phrase, semi-autobiographical. And I'm fond of that phrase, too. So some of my characters take off from people whom I knew growing up in Baltimore, but then I've changed them to suit the book I wanted to write.
So one of the scenes, Edward and Arthur are involved in the famous protests that took place to desegregate Gwynne Oak Park. What is the significance of that event and that scene in your own life?
Well, you know, growing up in Baltimore, it was a very much a mixed experience in that City was integrated, schools were integrated, but there still were places in Baltimore that weren't integrated, and Gwynne Oak Park, I think, certainly stood out. Here's a place where people would just want to go and have a good time, and that it was off limits to Negroes in Baltimore was obviously terrible and objectionable. And so that that protest, which was made national news at Gwin Oak Park, the 50th anniversary of which just occurred this past summer, I wanted to bring that into the novel because, as Arthur reflects at the end of that chapter, it all sort of comes home. This isn't just occurring in other places in the United States. It's occurring right here in Baltimore.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. I'm speaking with the novelist Baron Wormser. His new book is called Teach Us That Peace. He'll be speaking at the Pratt Library tomorrow. Mr. Wormser, I wonder if you'd read us a little passage of a scene that actually takes place at the Pratt Library. This is when Arthur meets a young woman named Rebecca, with whom he is quite taken.
Yes. A few blocks farther, Arthur got off at his stop. The rain had become a clinging drizzle. He walked past an assemblage of small businesses on side streets, a jeweler, a used book dealer, a vacuum cleaner repair shop, a beauty salon. At a corner, he looked at a newsstand that featured the local papers. Missile showdown near, the news post warned. Thousands of miles separated them. But Kennedy and Khrushchev seemed, in their newspaper photos, to be gesticulating at one another. Arthur thought of Westerns like High Noon. These guys weren't packing six-shooters, though. By the time he opened one of the big doors to the main branch of the Enoch Pratt Free Library on Cathedral Street, he felt cold and dank. He headed through another set of doors and then stood still. The huge chandelier-like lights that blazed overhead, the legions of wooden card catalogs, the warm, dry scent of tens of thousands of dozing pages, the vast open lobby, all this performed a kind of resuscitation on him. In Northwest Baltimore, he had a home and a bedroom in that home, but this was his mind's home. He loved this building. He breathed in a lungful of air as if he were at the ocean.
Yeah, I love that building too, and I think you've captured it just beautifully. I wonder, you've been in New England now for quite a while. Did you make any trips back to Charm City to refresh your memory about the locations?
Charm City is inside me from growing up in Baltimore, and then I went to college in Baltimore at Hopkins. So it's very much inside me. And some things have changed. I was down a couple years ago. I went with my son to Camden Yards to see a couple of games. And we walked around and we went into the Pratt. Of course, I wanted him to see that beautiful, beautiful space.
You are the author or co-author of, I think, about a dozen books. Most of them are poetry. What's the difference here writing a novel as opposed to poetry? How do you approach that endeavor?
Well, a novel, as a friend of mine puts it, is a boatload of words. And a poem is typically something literally like 100 to 200 words. So in a poem, you're fussing and focusing on a small number of words, all of which have close connections with one another. Whereas when you're writing a novel, obviously you're still paying very careful attention to language, but the whole architecture, the whole formal side is so different because the scale is so different in a novel, and you have to figure out an architecture and resolve issues such as point of view in a novel that just aren't there when you're writing poems.
Why did you choose this time period? It's a very turbulent time in American history. Of course, the entire 60s, and this is at the beginning of that decade, and there's, as we said at the beginning, there's, you know, turbulence going on in Susan's life and in Arthur's life as well as in the world around them. What was it about this particular time period that resonated with you?
Well, I think it's what you said, Tom. It's the beginning. Typically, the crucial event from that era is the assassination. But I wanted to write about the time before the assassination. I want to write about the time.
The assassination of President Kennedy, you're talking about,
Kennedy,
which happens
right.
In November of 1963.
That's right. And my book ends in August of 1963. I wanted to write about a time that's a very fraught time. Obviously, the missile crisis is an incredibly fraught moment, virtually for the human race. How people experience that, their relationship between these enormous goings on politically and historically, and then people just going about their daily lives in Baltimore. But then the civil rights movement and how that enters into people's daily lives in real ways, how black people and white people start, however tentatively, to talk to one another and try to, find out who one another are. So that era interested me a great deal, and I knew I wanted to get to the March on Washington because I think that's a crucial event in the life of this country that sometimes has been overshadowed by the awful and tragic assassination of the president.
We just have a few seconds left, but I want to mention an endeavor that you began in September in which you are writing an essay of about 1,000 words every week under the title Modern Times and What They Were and Are. Tell us a little bit about that project and why you've undertaken it.
Well, that project is my attempt to make sense of the 20th century and the early 21st century in terms of what was it and what is it. So basically, I've taken my ability as a writer of poems and writing in short form to write 1,000-word essays that treat of different aspects of what I call modern times. So the essays are arranged alphabetically. I've written over 50. And it's one of those things, much like the novel, that I felt I had to do as a writer, that it was part of my mission, so to speak, as a writer in the United States.
Baron Wormser, the book is called Teach Us That Peace. You can meet Mr. Wormser at the Enoch Pratt Central Library tomorrow evening in the Poe Room. His reading begins at 6 o'clock, and we've got a link to more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, where we will also have a link to his series of weekly essays called Modern Times, What They Were and Are. Baron Wormser, thanks so much for your time, and enjoy your trip back to Baltimore.
Thank you very much, Tom. It's been good talking with you.
Maryland Morning is an original production of Your Public Radio, WYPR, in Baltimore. The show is produced by Matt Purdy and Jamila Kay. Nathan Sterner directs and engineers. We've got production help from Payam Agagasam and Elizabeth Sherwood. Thanks this morning to Jody Peterson at Cliff House Audio in Montpelier, Vermont. Looking back in Maryland history, on this day in 1935, the Maryland Court of Appeals ordered the University of Maryland Law School to admit its first African-American student. Donald Murray graduated in 1938 and went on to be a partner in the law firm of Douglas, Perkins, and Murray, where he argued cases that helped to integrate other professional schools at the university. Looking ahead, on the Friday edition of Maryland Morning, Jed Dietz and Ann Hornaday join me for the monthly Maryland Morning Movie Mayhem. Until then, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.